It was perhaps the most critical moment of the war. The liberal landowners, who had supported the revolution in the beginning, had made secret alliances with the conservative landowners in order to stop the revision of property titles. The politicians who supplied funds for the war from exile had publicly repudiated the drastic aims of Colonel Aureliano Buendía, but even that withdrawal of authorization did not seem to bother him. He had not returned to reading his poetry, which filled more than 5 volumes and lay forgotten at the bottom of his trunk. At night or at siesta time, he would call one of his women to his hammock and obtain a rudimentary satisfaction from her, and then he would sleep like a stone that was not concerned by the slightest indication of worry. Only he knew at that time that his confused heart was condemned to uncertainty forever. At first, intoxicated by the glory of his return, by his remarkable victories, he had peeped into the abyss of greatness. He took pleasure in keeping by his right hand the Duke of Marlborough, his great teacher in the art of war, whose attire of skins and tiger claws aroused the respect of adults and the awe of children. It was then that he decided that no human being, not even Ursula, could come closer to him than 10 feet. In the center of the chalk circle that his aides would draw wherever he stopped, and which only he could enter, he would decide with brief orders that had no appeal the fate of the world. The first time that he was in Manaure after the shooting of General Moncada, he hastened to fulfill his victim's last wish, and the widow took the glasses, the medal, the watch, and the ring, but she would not let him in the door. "You can't come in, Colonel," she told him. "You may be in command of your war, but I'm in command of my house." Colonel Aureliano Buendía did not show any sign of anger, but his spirit only calmed down when his bodyguard had sacked the widow's house and reduced it to ashes. "Watch out for your heart, Aureliano," Colonel Gerineldo Márquez would say to him then. "You're rotting alive." About that time, he called together a second assembly of the principal rebel commanders. He found all types: idealists, ambitious people, adventurers, those with social resentments, even common criminals. There was even a former conservative functionary who had taken refuge in the revolt to escape a judgment for misappropriation of funds. Many of them did not even know why they were fighting. In the midst of that motley crowd, whose differences of values were on the verge of causing an internal explosion, one gloomy authority stood out: General Teófilo Vargas. He was a full-blooded Indian, untamed, illiterate, and endowed with quiet wiles and a messianic vocation that aroused a demented fanaticism in his men. Colonel Aureliano Buendía called the meeting with the aim of unifying the rebel command against the maneuvers of the politicians. General Teófilo Vargas came forward with his intentions. In a few hours, he shattered the coalition of better qualified commanders and took charge of the main command. "He's a wild beast worth watching," Colonel Aureliano Buendía told his officers. "That man is more dangerous to us than the Minister of War." Then a very young captain, who had always been outstanding for his timidity, raised a cautious index finger. "It's quite simple, Colonel," he proposed. "He has to be killed." Colonel Aureliano Buendía was not alarmed by the coldness of the proposition, but by the way in which, by a fraction of a second, it had anticipated his own thoughts. "Don't expect me to give an order like that," he said. He did not give it, as a matter of fact. But 2 weeks later, General Teófilo Vargas was cut to bits by machetes in an ambush, and Colonel Aureliano Buendía assumed the main command. The same night that his authority was recognized by all the rebel commands, he woke up in a fright, calling for a blanket. An inner coldness which shattered his bones and tortured him even in the heat of the sun would not let him sleep for several months, until it became a habit. The intoxication of power began to break apart under waves of discomfort. Searching for a cure against the chill, he had the young officer who had proposed the murder of General Teófilo Vargas shot. His orders were being carried out even before they were given, even before he thought of them, and they always went much beyond what he would have dared have them do.